Accession number 27804, Squadron Leader Ian Blair, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about the lectures you had in your typical days training at East Church. You're talking about...
The different sections. All these instructions were broken down. Our instructors... I was talking about the last thing I was talking about was the detonators. I was just about to explain that in the pre-war days, all the detonators were color-coded, and when you had a long delay detonator, you had a detonator which was up to 32 inches length. That's what they meant by long delay in the old days. In other words, a piece of fuse between the cap at one end and the detonating unit at the other end. Subsequently, in the wartime, they were all the same length, all short, because they did away with what they had in the old-fashioned pre-war bombs, was a central tube which ran through the bomb from nose to tail, into which you put a series of exploder units. They were just like bits of pipe, but you measured them with you measured the length of the thing using a stick, and then you just put the bits inside. That all went out. We also, when I said early on, you had to learn all about the fusing components. That's what I meant. But all the different bomb pistols for fusing bombs, nose and tail, the different types of vanes, the long delay fuses, pistols. You learned about numerous things. But this was spread over a period of about 12 months, don't forget. The first 6 months were comprised of a concentration of classroom instruction in the morning and sometimes in the afternoon, but it also covered a period of physical workshop work.
Now tell us about the workshop work.
Was really quite interesting. As I mentioned earlier on, when we came off the train, the workshop was away down to the east. It was a long way, but we had to march down to the workshop. But there was a fully equipped workshop there, which was in use by the men and also the boys. Now, we had...
Now, when you say fully equipped...
I mean fully equipped.
What does that mean at that time?
Well, lathes, turning machines, grinders, you name it, we had them all there. But I always remember I think the instructor's name was Mr. Beckinsale. And if he was 60, he was at least 60. But he had a brilliant way of putting things over to the boys. First of all, we were issued with a toolkit, an armourer's toolkit, which was a bit unique in these days. But
What would be in it?
I'm just going to say, this toolbox was about 18 inches square and about 9 inches deep. And it had basic tools in it. It had a series of files. Round files, square files, triangular files, bastard files, and cross-cut files, rat-tail files, and oil can, pliers, spanners, different sizes, and calipers. Yeah, there was a set of calipers, there was a steel rule, and a set of dividers. Because that all came into the... That seems to be his general basic engineering tools and a key. We're each given a toolbox, the key. And a pair of overalls, two pairs of overalls, one to wear and one to be in the laundry. We were allocated to a bench. Don't forget, the classes were not more than about 12. But Mr. Beckinsale used to come around, but he had his blackboard and the first job that we were given, which I shall really never forget, was to manufacture a 3/16 quarter inch set spanner, which was roughly about 4.5 inches long from a piece of mild steel. Here's the steel. We were given a piece of steel, and we had to file this and shape it and carry out all the engineering practices to reduce this piece. It's not a straight bar, which is a file which had angled head on it, and this file was blue. That's to say, it was coloured blue by heat process. It was hardened, case hardened, using every engineering practice was carried out on this piece of steel, and it eventually finished up as a 5/16 quarter inch spanner, even to stamping the size of the things on the heads. And everybody, that spanner I carried around after I left the school. I had it, we all had it for years, I'm sure we all had them for years, but I carried mine for many a long year. But it was gauged up, and you know, it was definitely it would fit any. That was our first test. That was the first 6 months.
That took 6 months.
Well, we were only working a few hours a week on it. During the first process of the workshop practice. Now, the second period of the 6 months, we had to make a paper punch. Now, it doesn't sound a great deal, but it was a small base of about 3 inches square, and a punch which you hammered to punch holes in paper. And now that was machined. It was screwed. You had to cut the thread. You had to temper the cutting spindle. You had to make a handle. You had to make a spring. And it was made in steel and aluminium. You had two types of metal and the bracket. And that was another thing we had to do. Made that. And we also had to make, in a smith shop, we had to make an oil can, a conical-shaped oil can. And we had to had a brass nozzle, which had to be turned up on the lathe, and the thread cut on it so that it screwed into the female part of the can. That was a little thing. And that was all, and the whole essence was to get us familiar with the various engineering practices.
Now, what tools
you got
were you using? Pardon? What tools were you using?
We were using what we've been given, basically, the files. Predominantly, it was nearly all filing.
There's no mechanical stuff yet, no lathe.
No, there was only a lathe for turning up the lathe for turning up the little nozzle. There was some lathe work and grind and tin smith. You had to solder. You say you had to solder the tin. You had to beat the base. You had to roll some of the metal, and you had to mark it out. The marking out was the main. This is why you had to scribe. You had to learn how to cut from a flat plate a conical vessel. But you know, these were just taken over the years, and this guy did very well. I think we were as Group 2 armourers. We were not required to do other than just basic jobs like soldering. One thing I remember, we were taught to solder Bowden cables, flexible by how, because these were part of our trade. The bomb carriers in these days were operated by cables, and in consequence, the nipples on the end of the cables used to come and drift, and the nipples on the gun turret cables came and drift. These sort of things we did. We were taught how to talk about fluxes and about heating and soldering. Very good, very useful, basic stuff. And the use of soldering irons. It sounded easy. We also had, we also taught the use of a soldering iron, which was known as a MOX, M-O-X, which was worked by a Sendite cartridge, which the head of the soldering iron was flat, and you opened the lid and you laid this flat cartridge in and you closed the lid and you lit he ignited this cartridge and burned with a great heat, sendite, it burned with a great heat and transmitted. This was obviously for use in the field, basically, or out on the flight line in these days. But it had a very good chisel head on it, and it was great. Quite a good, useful tool. Things like that, how to use blow lamps. All the safety precautions were drummed into us in no uncertain terms. But that was, on an ad hoc basis, in between the morning and the afternoon. There wasn't ground instruction. Half of the squadron would be on ground instruction, and the other half would be in workshops. In the afternoon, we would swap.
Ground instructions are lectures. Pardon? Ground instructions are lectures, is it? Ground instruction, that's the lectures.
Yes, ground, yeah, we call, yes, that's right. Or once we'd gone through the workshops, we started doing, sometimes we went on the range for a lecture.
Firing range. Well, tell us about that. How did you do on the firing range?
Well, we didn't do very well. The firing range didn't come to the second, after 6 months, we were concentrating on the nuts and bolts.
We'll come back to that then. What about drill? Did you have any drill?
Well, we interspersed the drill with the workshop practices. The drill was carried out sometimes in the depending on the program. You either might do your drill before you went to lectures, or halfway through the lectures you did your drill, and vice versa, the workshop. That was normal foot drill for the first 6 months.
Now, you hadn't done that before, presumably.
No, nobody had done
perhaps
that.
Perhaps in the Boy Scouts.
It was quite good. Oh, well, it started off.
How did you take to drill? Because some people can do it, some people can't.
You must bear in mind, we were only 16 and a quarter, the youngest, so we really didn't really know. But we probably, there were one or two of us who got a bit bored about it. But, I mean, the point was, you had this, you had to face up to the fact of life. It was part of service life. And it was the flight sergeant was very good. It was only when the warrant officer came along and got up our noses a bit, he thought he knew it all. But that went on. Then in the second period, we started getting arms drill with a rifle. We were issued with rifles, with drill purpose rifles and bayonets. And
now, did you do any infantry weapon work, i.e. learning to use the bayonet?
We were just doing arms drill. Ceremonial arms drill. And the thing about the ceremonial arms drill was that must have been at the end of 6 months, the second entry turned up. So we then had 100 bods. From 45 we went to 100 bods. When it came to the passing out parade after the first year for number one entry, we had 100 people on parade, the two squadrons. And
I'll come back to passing out parade.
Yeah.
What about, let's do the range work like?
Point about the passing out parade was I was going to, it was linked in with the arms drill, actually. But we'll go back to the range. We had been instructed on rifles, as I said, and pistols and revolvers. And we went down onto the ranges, and we were then allowed to fire them. That was the whole essence. And part of the single shots, of course, to get the hang of it. 25-yard range, we had all the safety precautions, the red flags, and went through all the drill. It was very, very well organized. It was either A, today we'll fire the rifle, or B, tomorrow we'll fire the Colt automatic or what have you. The main object of the exercise was to show us that the things could be, although they were off the target, could be corrected. And we went through the drill of moving the sights to get it. One point I didn't mention was that Eastchurch was the home of the RAF rifle team who shot at Bisley each year, and every one of our instructors, literally every one of them, was a marksman of that repute. Even the secretary of the RAF Rifle Association, who was a Queen's Medal holder at Bisley, Flight Sergeant Collins, he was in the offices there. And of course, when it got to the summer time, all the instructors were practicing furiously for Bisley, so they needed help. Who did they call upon? The courses, the young. We then were asked to volunteer to go to the long ranges at Sheerness with the rifle team. It was a day out. It was a real good day. Of course, if the weather was great, it was fab. So I think nearly all volunteered to go, and we would teamed up, and we were marking. Yeah, well, we were off down to these ranges, and these the staff instructors, who were all expert shots, used to shoot at anything from 200 yards to 1,000 yards on the Sheerness ranges, and they all had their own service weapons, which they had doctored, i.e. this was part of the... They used to tell us how they doctored them, you know, how they made them capable of being so accurate. And we used to go out at the crack of dawn, literally, with our rations, and go out on the ranges and stay there all day. But they were really good. They were great guys, I mean.
And you'd
really
be doing the butts?
Yeah, we were either at the firing point collecting up empties or down the butts, pasting up. Mind you, they were all bulls, so you only had, you only had about the two squares, because you had to have them up and down. But it was good, very good experience, because it gave us a lot of information on range procedure. And these guys who were finding difficulty with rifles, they used to show us how they doctored them and how they rectified the discrepancies. And there's one other point which probably isn't known, is that the fact that the rifle team used to get a very selected batch of ammunition from the ordnance factory. The ammunition that they were delivered to them for their practices was of a very high standard in terms of muzzle velocity. You know, had been proof tested before it arrived, so that was a thing that. But they did that, and we didn't get anything for it apart from a day out. But it kept the cooperation between the NCOs and the boys very good. So, however, that was one of our perks.
Any other training you did while you were there? Any other types of training?
Well, only on the aircraft. When it was physical on the aircraft, we exercised the armament to progress to take weapons off the aircraft and put.
Now, which is this the Vickers and Lewis again?
Well,
or was it the Browning? But I'm not
sure.
The
Browning never wasn't in the service then. We saw the Browning gun. We knew what a Browning gun looked like. We knew what a 50 caliber Browning gun looked like. We handled it in the classroom, and we had a brief look at it. So we were not ignorant of it, but we hadn't had the detailed explanation. That came subsequently when one got into the squadrons. That's a few years ahead.
And what happens? What about this fitting?
Bomb up the aircraft for practice bombing. Oh, that was another thing we had to.
Now, how did you do that?
Well, we used to. There was a remote area where they had the bombs. The smoke bombs are painted white, and they're filled in this country. But in overseas, you have to fill them. But then they're fitted with a detonator, so you were detailed to work, and you put eight bombs on. Tech bomb racks, put eight bombs on the aircraft, and the pilot would go off the bombing range and do his thing and come back. That was routine. That wasn't any great problem. we had the air-to-ground firing or air-to-air firing. We used to arm up, in these days it was Bulldogs.
Bulldogs. Bristol Bulldog.
Yeah, a lovely aircraft. Difficult aircraft to... We used to arm up the aircraft. They had.
Now, how would you arm a Bristol Bulldog? You know, I mean, what did you actually do?
Well, you had to have the guns out first. Guns were taken off to clean and checked over to working, and then put back on the aircraft. And the ammunition was fed through the chutes into the guns and linked up. And that's as far as you could. You couldn't.
Is it a single seater?
Yeah. Two guns.
And two wings, of course.
Hmm?
It's a biplane.
Yeah, biplane, yeah. And you had the synchronizing gear, you see. And that was, we didn't talk about that in any, but that was checked over. That was all we had to do to arm them up. But one of the exercises we had to do was to check that the synchronization of the guns, and by that I mean that the bullets would miss the propeller. And it was done for real. They used to take an aircraft. Provided for us, and the instructor would say, "Right, this aircraft has got new guns. I want you to line it up." And he went through the drill. And the Bulldog was one of the difficult aircrafts. You had to literally lean over the top of the main plane and go down and work in the engine to adjust the cams. But the principle was that you looked up the gun barrel to a spot on a given spot on the wall, which was the right place, and then adjusted the cam on the engine so that when the blade of the propeller was on the top half of the barrel, the cam on the engine was in the right position to fire the guns. It was an impulse. It operated by impulse. So that when it was at the top dead center, when it hit the plunger at top dead center, then the propeller had gone by the time the bullet arrived at there. But that was one exercise we had to do for live. And then subsequently, they put on this aircraft, they bolted a 6-foot diameter plywood disc, and this aircraft was run up, put on the stop butts, and they used to run the engine up at cruising revs and fire a gun and look at the burst, the relation to the propeller. They're free cruising revs, maximum revs, and fast tickover. That's it. That's the three, fast tickover. And they record all these bursts, hopefully, nothing had gone through that. So when they took the thing off, they examined it. And if there was any errors, if it was too near, you obviously had to move it back.
Did you check the harmonisation of the guns as well?
The harmonisation was really secondary to the bullets. The harmonising was done before we lined the propellers up.
Can you just explain to them? I know I've mentioned it, not you, but can you just explain what harmonisation of the guns is?
Well, harmonisation is simply positioning the guns in such a position that the bullets will arrive at a given point in space when the guns are fired. And that point in these days was roughly 250 yards in front of the aircraft. When World War II came along, there was no synchronization gear, but there was harmonization. And with 8 guns, you harmonized them invariably at 300 yards. In fact, initially, I think it was about 350 yards. But they didn't have a concentration of fire on one spot. It was spread out over a sort of elliptical shape. The idea was to get the maximum concentration of firepower, and that distance it had to cater for the time of flight of the bullet from the gun to that point, and also, more importantly, the gravity drop. Because there was an 8-foot gravity drop, and you had to lift so that But later
so
on,
the guns had to be aimed up. So
yeah, the guns had to be elevated. It's a thing you had to learn the hard way. I mean, we knew this in theory.
These are Vickers, I presume.
Yeah, it didn't make any what difference. The Browning guns and the Spitfires.
Same thing, yeah.
Well, Browning guns and the Gladiators. Same principle, except that it doesn't make any difference which type of weapon it was. Any weapon, even the 30mm has got to be harmonized at a given distance, probably further away, but... That was basically our...
Did you get any flights? I mean, you know... You
no, not when we're on a course.
Now, any other sorts of training that you were doing? A PT, I mean, you had 15 minutes in the morning, but was there any sort of cross-country
We had our organised sports every Wednesday afternoon, in bed or out of barracks. You know, you had to go and participate. Those who didn't participate in rugby, football, hockey, had to run up round the water tower and get a stamp. And swimming, we had a swimming pool, of course.
And which did you do of the sports?
Well, I did them all eventually. I wasn't very keen on rugby, and I wasn't all that good at football, but I did the running most up round the water tower and back. That was predominantly what I did. But later on in my service life, I got interested in hockey and used to play hockey for the squad and that type of thing, but enjoyed it then.
What about sort of cross-country runs, assault courses?
No, we didn't have assault courses, but up round the water tower was the sort of basic cross-country.
That was
up a very steep hill. You know. But we didn't have really cross. I don't see...
Now... when you finished your day, what time would your day finish? You'd have the morning session, lunch,
well, you
afternoon
had,
session. How did it go?
They had tea, and then you sometimes had a classroom instruction in the evening, sometimes.
So not much time to yourself at all?
No, you didn't have a lot of time to yourself. I mean, during the evening courses were taken up by study in as much as one had to pass... The higher education test, which was required.
Did you have special lessons for that as well?
Yeah, it was classroom work. I was just looking at my record. I see that was, we used to call it HET, parts 1, 2, and 3. You had to get part 3 to become a sergeant.
These are the same as in the regular.
Noticed on my records there that it's marked. I forgot all about it.
And that's just basic maths, English, and...
arithmetic.
Did you do any history of the RAF? I mean, I know the RAF barely
had
a history.
No, that's strange. It may seem no, not at that time, no.
Were you aware of... I mean, because of your interest in the RAF, well, flying...
Yeah.
Were you aware of the aces in the First World War?
I've got the books. I have the Biggles books and the Ball McCudden... Ira Jones. I've still got them somewhere in the other bookcase.
And you knew then?
I knew what it was about. I knew a bit about Biggles. And I knew about Leif Robinson and people like that. There was something I was going to mention. Oh, yes. Are we still on?
Yes, you're going fine.
Part of the administration, we never talked about it, but our pay was four shillings a week. And every Friday we had a pay parade, and it was done on alphabetical order. There was no excuses. Fall in for pay parade in alphabetical order. And they went through it. And on pay parade, the paymaster gave you a shilling. And you may wonder why this shilling. Well, I'll tell you what the shilling was. And I'm talking about old money. A penny halfpenny. Are we all right?
Yes, carry on.
A penny halfpenny went for a stamp to write home. A penny halfpenny went for subsidy for haircuts. And a penny halfpenny went for barrack damages. And the last penny halfpenny was yours. And that was the three shillings went into your credits, so that when you went home on breaks at Easter and Christmas, you collected your credits.